An absolute lie. My Facebook status this morning is an absolute lie. I'm not looking forward to speaking. My stepsister and her family arrived last night, and my little 16-month-old nephew is currently eating breakfast with my two sons at our table, and I would much rather be there. But I'm being really flippant, but it basically sums up our society. We are busy communicating through an edited filter, and I took part in that this morning. We look at each other's edited lives and we believe that they're real, and they're absolutely not. We text and we DM, we Facebook, we tweet, we post on Instagram, Periscope. We sometimes do Skype, but that feels a bit too exposed, so because we have to do face-to-face, and we think we're communicating, but absolutely not, not really. Being Northern, I generally communicate a little differently. My Northern family think I've softened up, and yet there are a number of people in our house yesterday who absolutely understand that I am a work in progress. I'm still very aware that my straightforward approach and therefore communication is not viewed as such at all, and I apologize for that. And so I'm really aware of communication. The communication that I wanted to speak to you about today is like day-to-day communications, and I've been looking at it a lot over the last few months, and I really apologise to the lovely Bibra ladies. You'll know which ones they are, ladies. They're the smart-looking ones at the back. Because there's pockets of this that I have used in a talk with you, so I just apologise. So. But it's the day-to-day stuff, and I've been looking at it a lot over the last few months, and it began really accidentally. Back in February, there's a TED team who TED are online talks, and they're filmed at TED events across the world. Tunbridge Wells was one of those across the world places. And the TED organisers started tweeting that they were coming to Tunbridge Wells and they're looking for speakers to talk about diversity. And so for those of you who don't know me, I manage a Christian youth work charity called Life and Soul. And we work with vulnerable children aged 5 to 25, including homeless young parents. And I thought, I work with a group of diverse people. Maybe I've got something to share. And I would never usually put my hand up for something like that, but I stupidly just read a book called Lean In by Sheryl Sandberg, and she's the COO of Facebook, and she's absolutely passionate about women stepping up and leading and not shying away from challenges. And her Lean In is talking about leaning into the boardroom table, because in her years of experience, women lean out as the blokes lean in, to the point of she's been in boardrooms where she's asked to zip to the loo and all the guys have looked at each other because they actually don't have a women's toilet on board level. So I just read this book and I thought, all right, okay, lean into her suggestion. Let's go for it. And so I called the guy who was organising it and he said, right, okay, well, you can't talk about your charity. You can't deliver a pitch. What are you going to talk about? So I was on the phone going, Lord, what am I going to talk about? And then this story of that we've been involved with just kind of popped into my head. And I said, well, I've got a grain of an idea about something that I've come across. And so maybe I could share that. And I spoke about a young girl that we'd come across 5 years ago who we invited into our home. And I previously worked with her on her project. And she had just a really troubled upbringing. And at dinner one night, we discovered that our mealtime was the first time she'd eaten as a family. And she was 19. And what I didn't say in my TED talk was actually that she was deaf. And to this day, it still floors me that she wasn't given an opportunity to converse and as such wasn't diagnosed with her deafness till she started school, until she was at tables and people realised that this girl wasn't communicating. All her mealtimes were spent in front of a TV with a tray on her lap. And so I went on to the speaker and I said, she's not the only one. And so I was invited to talk. And in my TED talk, I spoke about how many young people that we have met who eat alone, and it's around 70%. And So 70% of the homeless people we've worked with have not had people to share their day with, share their hopes and dreams with, and their challenges. And they've not had a space to do all the things that our kids do, like homework or a mat to paint at a child or splash their yogurt, worn their dessert on their head. They haven't completed an art project or revised or been listened to. They haven't been given space to be them, and they haven't found their voice, and they haven't been given time. My challenge at the TED event was to encourage the people that I was speaking to make some time to eat together. And I gave them stats as to why that was a good idea, both at home and at business. And I'm going to share them, and I know that a couple of you will have listened to these already, but I just wanted to put it in context for those who haven't. So in Relate's yearbook of 2011, an average class of 30 people, by the time they reach 16th birthday, 10 will have witnessed their parents separate, 3 will have suffered mental health problems, 8 will have suffered severe violence, abuse or neglect, 3 will be living in a step family, and 1 will have experienced the death of a parent. 7 will report to have been bullied. I challenge them to say that if one of our children aren't one of those statistics, then their peers will be. And with their peers having to deal with such issues, where is the space for them to explore it? And I had some really lovely feedback from TED, and there's a team there who work with child soldiers in war-torn countries, and he's since contacted me to say they're now doing mealtimes differently in their orphanages so that the adults are engaging with the children at the table. And that's a really powerful thing. There were people in education at TED who said the same. We're going to get people to be sitting more with our young people when they're eating. And so TED also brought to us a literary specialist to offer to work with our homeless young teenagers. And so it was really encouraging, really wonderful. But what TED also brought to me was a new learning that I ignorantly assumed that this problem sits within a set demographic, and it absolutely doesn't. At the event, one of the delegates came up to me, and she is, you know, a 50k plus a year salary earner, and understandably spends much of her time away from home. And she said, "We never eat together as a family. My children eat breakfast whilst I'm in the shower, and I'm always home later than them. We're all busy doing our own things at weekends." She said, "Do you actually think if we ate together just once a week, it would make a difference?" And I don't think she realised it at the time, but what she was asking me was, if I give my family a little of my time, would it be better than giving them no time at all? And I said, yes, it would make a huge difference. In Proverbs 18:21, it says, "Death and life are in the power of the tongue. We can build them up and knock them down with our words." Death and life are in the power of the tongue. We can build them up and knock them down with our words. And I just want us to think about that. We can build people up and knock them down with our words. Just last week, Ali and Liz and Mary and Claire and I were all attending a training for volunteer mentors to go into schools, and we were learning about something called solution-focused mentoring. And the team were saying that in just six half-hour sessions of positive encouragement, a young person can transform the way that they behave in 6 half-hour sessions. And this method of mentoring, of literally providing encouraging, positive questions, allowed young people to access positive mind frames. And that's been proven to change behaviour within 3 hours, 6 half-hour sessions within 3 hours. This stuff is given by strangers to a young person once a week for 6 weeks. If that can happen with a stranger speaking into a life of a young person over 3 hours, I wonder what giving an hour a day to the child or young person in our home could do. Or imagine what half hour to our partner or our parent or our neighbour could do if 3 hours can change behaviour. If we're not sitting together, communicating with each other, we're not offering life. In Hebrews 10:24, we're told not to neglect meeting up, as is the habit of some, but encouraging one another. And so I've left some little post-it notes, and I just want us to pause at this stage, and I want us to think of someone who means so much to us that we're not bringing life to with our words at the minute. I want you to write their name on the post-it note with you, and I want you to commit today to connecting with them. So that's the first thing. So who means so much to us, but we're not bringing them to life with our words. And I want you to write their name and connect, commit to connecting with them today. Okay, so I know that for some of you that might be a hard step and the relationship may currently be fractious, or you might not be in contact with someone for a while. And I know what I certainly do is if I haven't been in contact with someone, I then start feeling awkward about making contact with them. But I really encourage you to take that step. I've had an old friend of mine on my heart for some weeks now and been meaning to contact them, and I made contact with them this week and said, "Oh, I've missed you." And I don't know what stopped me before. I just felt awkward. I thought, oh my goodness, we haven't seen each other for so long. And I'm so pleased we're meeting up soon. So whilst doing the research about eating together for TED, I came across the Center for Families at Purdue University in the US. And I had some really lovely conversations with a woman called Barbara over there and with her group of researchers. And as we talked, I shared my anecdotal information with my young homeless people. And she shared with me the statistics from years of research. And I was just blown away by what they were telling me. And I can guarantee if you're not currently eating with your family at this point, you will be after hearing these stats. Because actually, at TED, I didn't have a prompt. I had to do it all from memory, and I actually forgot to share them. One of the main bits of my talk, and I came up and went, oh. That was a bit crucial. So this is the following research, and it's based on both single and dual parent households. So it doesn't matter if it's a one or two parent family, the stats come up the same. And many of us go to a library, and we've got a lot of teachers in here who can sit and read with children, really encourage us. You know, they say 15 minutes of reading with an adult every night. But wait for this. Families who eat together have children who have increased vocabulary more so than if they are read to. More so than if they're read to. I want you to think about that. More so than if they're read to. And we're placing so much importance. Now, we get home from, you know, school and it's read to the children, read to the children. They'd have an increased vocabulary if we actually sat and ate together. And have greater academic achievement. They're less likely to smoke, drink, or take drugs. They have delayed sexual experiences. They are less likely to get depressed or have suicidal tendencies. They have more positive peer relationships, healthier eating habits, greater social skills, stronger family ties, and a greater sense of identity and belonging. That blows me away that all we need to do is sit and have dinner together and all of those things can be better in our children's lives. And I forgot to mention them in my talk. I know that we're talking about families here, but this can be offered to anyone. I wonder what that would help prevent in our church if we ate together a little bit more often or with our neighbours. I want to think about all the consequences that we can potentially prevent and the hurt we can potentially prevent and the money we can save if we just had time to sit together. Hi. Hi. We recently just had a wonderful holiday in France, and it came to the end of the holiday, and we all gave thanks and said, we're going to do kind of the pit and the peak of the holiday, the best bit, the worst bit. And I gave thanks for rain, because it actually slowed us down. I didn't realise it was going to rain quite so much when I got back, otherwise I wouldn't have thanked for it, but... at the time, I gave thanks for rain. And then I came back and had a look on Facebook pages. And when I saw sunshine in other people's photos, I then thought, did we choose the wrong place to go? And we'd had an amazing time, hadn't we? We'd had just such an amazing time. And I was like, oh my goodness, maybe I chose the wrong place. And you start doubting yourself because of, you know, everything that's, you know, in Facebook. That's not my talk. I just thought I'd share it. We were recently traveling back through France, and we'd had this wonderful week, and the rain slowed us down, and we drank wine and gin and beer. I can't think what else we drank. We drank too much wine and gin and beer at that point. But we played board games and used glitter pens, and we'd been in Freya land. It was a wonderful place. We swam, and then the day before our departure, the sun came out, and we went to the beach, and we hurried and went to the beach, and it was glorious. And the next day, we began this, like, 12-hour journey home. And at midpoint, we were kind of heading up to the coast. We were like, come on, boys, it's sunny, we'll head up to the coast. And then we found ourselves in Bayeux, and I said to the boys, do you want to keep driving for another couple of hours and get to the beach, or do you want to stop now and go and see the tapestry? And Alex said, the tapestry, that's like a once-in-a-lifetime thing, right? I think we should do that. I was like, good choice. That's great. And as we walked through the story of the tapestry, there was an image which really struck me, and it's not a famous one, you know, even though the tapestry is famous, but it wasn't an important one. It wasn't of Harold being shot in the eye or people getting stuck in Mont Saint-Michel in the quicksand, but it was of a soldier sat eating his meal off the back of his shield. And the commentator in my little earphones was saying, as servants, the soldiers had to eat off the back of their shields. They weren't allowed to eat at the table. And I stood there and thought, as a society, this is what we're doing. This is what's happening. As Christians in society, we're acting as servants rather than God's children. And I know we're called to serve, but we have to also replenish. And we're invited to replenish by sitting at the Lord's table. And actually, we're choosing not to. We're choosing to be servants and sitting there. And then we're finding ourselves all a bit wrung out and because we're not replenishing. We don't come together to connect, and we're forgetting our worth, and we're undervaluing the worth of those around us and the worth of the relationship that we can have with God when we sit and connect with him. I have spent a couple of days this week just sitting at the table. I sat with Ali and Liz, and when you sit at a table, it's amazing how much someone knows you. I was exhausted. We sat together on Wednesday morning. We were all about to go into a meeting, into a project. And I said, actually, do you mind if I need some time, a prolonged period of time next week to do some of this stuff that's in my head? Can I do it next week? Can you guys do it on your own? And if I'd have sent that text, if I'd have texted that to Ali and said, would you mind actually if you guys do this on your own next week? I need a stretch of time. She'd have said, yeah, no problem. But we were sat together at the table, and she looked at me and Liz looked at me, and they said, why are you putting that off for a week? Go now. We don't need you today. And that's the power of it. And I sat at my dining room table with my post-it notes this week, just getting stuff off my table. And then the next night I found myself doing a menu plan. And I said to God, I was reminded again of France when our boys had all collected bags and bags, huge bags of apples, and we brought them back with us and we took what we needed. And then we actually went around the neighbours. The boys took the apples around the neighbours to see if they wanted any of these cooking apples. And they all went. And as I was doing my menu plan last night, I said, oh, Lord, I actually sat and, you know, was chatting to him, and I said, do you know what? I've forgotten to get dessert for tomorrow night for when Kim and everyone's here. God, I could really do with a bag of apples being dropped at my door so I can make an apple crumble. And I'd totally forgotten that I'd had that little chat with him. And Graham and I were sat down yesterday having a cup of tea, and there was a knock on my door. My neighbour came up with a bag of apples, and he said, hi, I've just picked these from you from my garden. I just thought you might need them. And I said, you are such an answer to prayer. I actually prayed for someone to come to my door with a bag of apples. And he did. And so I just think we need to connect more. We need to sit. We're neglecting to connect. If you're like me, we're lazily addicted to social media, and we're connecting and not connecting with that. In 2013, 30% of divorce cases in the UK featured the word Facebook. I think that's astounding, 30%. And I am a lazy Facebook addict. I do this. It's by my coffee machine, and I do that. Or if I'm in a queue, I do that. My thumbs are going to be wrecked when I'm older. I just scroll, and it's lazy. And I convince myself that because I live far from my family, that I need to be on Facebook. And the truth is, I absolutely don't, because I connect with them far less since being on Facebook, it has to be said. I see pictures and updates from my family, and I feel that I'm in contact with them. And last year, I realized that I hadn't spoken to my brother, who lives in the US, in a month, because I'd seen him on Facebook, and I'd seen what he'd been up to, but I hadn't actually spoken to him. And before Facebook, we used to call each other every week. In the simplicity of connecting online, we're actually disconnecting. And I'd really just say, if you have a chance, I would Google the innovation of loneliness. And it's actually a graphic visualization of actually a TED talk. A woman talks about connection. And she the graphics basically show you the more and more people that we're trying to connect with, the more disconnected we're becoming, and we're actually becoming a nation of lonely people, or a whole culture of lonely people. And I think that's tragic. So, and whilst I use social media, I think it's, you know, it can be a great information sharer, but relationally it's hideous. And I think my friend's going to be shocked when I actually say this. I actually hate it. I actually hate text messages. I actually hate instant messenger. I get really stressed when I hear a ping. When I worked in London, one of our clients was Microsoft. We actually weren't allowed to email them on a Friday. We had to pick up the phone and speak to each other because, and that was 12 years ago, they realized that by connecting online, we were actually disconnecting. And so it was in our contract that we had to physically pick up the phone and speak to our client on a Friday. And what often happened was you'd have, you know, a half-hour conversation with the client. They'd say, that's great, can you just put that in an email so I can have it on Monday. I'm absolutely not joking. We're tidying up our lives. We're, rather than building real relationships. Ali Tranter gave me a book, great book last week, and said, which was titled, Will You Be My Facebook Friend? And it presented something I kind of acknowledged, but never completely, you know, realized. Because it doesn't have a dislike button, your popularity is based on presenting only positive information. So my dog died. Who would like that? So Tilly was brave to the very end, you know, like. My dog hasn't died, by the way. It's just an example. Or we have the opposite. Look how awful my life is. And then that can become a competition. Facebook is fake book. Facebook makes us doubt ourselves, makes us less content with what we've got. And we don't just do that on Facebook. We do it in our lives as well. We forget to look around our table. We're always looking beyond the table at what someone else is doing. We do it in church. I've been observing. I was observing people last week when people were worshipping, and also people looking to see who's arrived, and, you know, they weren't engaging with God at all, you know, and I was one of them because I was looking around too. Ooh. But we do that, don't we? We spend our time looking out from what is important to us, and we waste time on things that don't need to be in our lives. We're seeking approval through likes on our page. I brought this book. I love this book. I can't go into a bookshop without buying a book. And so I bought this book. I was actually looking for a birthday present for Han and ended up buying myself a book. Sorry about that, Han. Happy birthday. I just read this book. It's called The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying. And I know. because I thought there must be some kind of art to tidying, because I don't seem to do it, you know, in the most time critical way. You know, I need a time management. I was thinking I need time management on tidying. I feel like I'm always tidying, but it really changed my life. And well, for this week, and it's she really challenged me. Her name is Marie Kondo, and she's got something called the KonMari effect of tidying. And she says, in order to tidy our homes, we must first declutter. She said, don't tidy room by room. What you actually have to do is declutter from the base. And she says, you have to remove all the excess from our lives. And she says, now this is the challenge. She says, don't hold on to anything that does not bring us joy. Do not hold on to anything that does not bring us joy. My family have hated me the last few weeks. I mean, does this bring you joy? And Alex went, I'm warm. I was like, that's not enough. We need joy. Get out. So the past couple of weeks, I've been systematically decluttering my life. She says, start with clothes. So I took 4 bin bags of clothes to the charity shop. I took 15 bags of books. Usually my bookshelf is like double level and on the top. And do you know what? It was stressing me out. How many of you feel stressed that people have given you books? You must read this book. You must read this book. And I look at my bookshelf and all I was doing was going, still haven't read that book. Still haven't read that book. So, and the things that give me joy and books give me joy were actually stressing me out. She said, if you've never read it, you never will. Get rid of it. And if you then want to buy it, you'll buy it again. So I've been like literally chucking stuff out. It's been brilliant. All the books that I promised I'd one day read, get rid of them. Crockery that I'd inherited, hated, felt obliged to keep. It went. It made me think of what fills me with joy and what I need to keep hold of. It took me right back to basics. And my family, my friends, my relationships, my connections with people, they are the things that bring me joy. They are the things that fill me with joy. If my house was empty, if my fridge was full, they are the things that I need to hold on to, the things that I need to invest in. And then I was decluttering my mind. I booked a day to think. And it was the best day of the week. And I sat, I said, Lord, what is in my mind? Because it's feeling full and clogged and heavy and horrible. And I sat with 25 post-it notes on my dining room table of the things that were in my head. The central one said, what is in my head? And I spent an hour of thinking about what it was in my head and writing it down. And then I gave myself actions for each of them to tidy them away. And by the end of the day, 11 things were gone, no longer in my head. And I think that's the type of tidying up we need to do, you know, the tidying up of our minds. We don't need to tidy our relationships into quick texts and I'm fine. I want to be real. So I want us to take a moment and I just want us to close your eyes for a minute and think about something that you think needs your time. And I want you to connect with your joy, with something that makes you feel wonderful. And it may be time for someone else or time for you. And it might have been a skill that you've neglected or a friendship that used to make you feel wonderful. You might be so busy looking after others that you've stopped eating healthily, or you might not have had your hair cut for a while. Always get a haircut. I always say, cost per wear. Cost per wear. I wear it every day, love. That's why it costs that much. You may have been meaning to take up a course or learn a language that you love. So whatever brings you joy, I want you to connect with that. And I want you to imagine doing it again and capturing how that feels. Or how that would feel if you started it again tomorrow. And then I want you to think about the thing that is getting in the way of that happening. And I want you to commit to removing that barrier from connecting with it. And when you've pictured all of that, I want you to write it down and commit to yourself that you're going to do it. Now you've committed to contacting someone and committed to doing something for you. We're near the end. Connecting works. Just last week, Ali, Liz and I were in one of our projects in the evening and we were working with some young people and one of them had been in every secondary school in Tunbridge Wells and she wouldn't engage. And I was thinking of Em when I wrote this because I just thought, oh my goodness, I know if Em would have met her, she would have just loved her straight away. You know, you just have someone really challenging who's swearing every other word and you just think, wow, we're going to become friends. We're going to get to connect with you. We're going to get to understand you. And we sat at the table and lovely Kaylee, who's a member of our church, brought in a creative activity and we all started doing it together. And we made space for her to bring out her talents. It was something connected within her, something she'd forgotten that she was good at. And she suddenly said, wow, I used to be good at this. I was, they predicted that I was going to get a B. And she just, something just connected in her, and she just started flying again. She'd forgotten something that she was good at. And so I don't want us to forget. I want us to connect and to communicate and just to be real. The final page of the book that Ali gave me last week was a challenge. It said that if you look back in 6 months' time on what you're spending your time doing today, whether that's on Twitter, on Facebook, and all the stuff that doesn't bring you joy, how will you feel if you look back in 6 months and think about what we're doing today? How would you feel? And so that's my challenge for you today. I'm offering you all to only keep in your life that which brings you joy. Amen.